Hello and welcome to the latest podcast. My name, as usual, is James Skoltok and I'm the editor of the IMI's Motor Pro magazine. And today we are talking Mission Motorsport and how military people are shifting careers and joining automotive. To help me discuss the topic, we're joined by David Guilfoyle, Technical Training Manager at Mission Motorsport. And I'm looking forward to the conversation. So, David, as a bit of background for listeners then, what is Mission Motorsport and how does it work with the military personnel to help them come out of military life and into civilian life?
So, Mission Motorsport, the Force's motorsport charity. So we use motorsport and other automotive-related sporting days out to engage with service leavers and veterans. Some of those will be medically retired and some of them will not be. So we do quite a range of different things on the sporting side. We do karting, we do track days, skid pan days, we even hold our own race every November over Remembrance Weekend, which is called Race for Remembrance. We then also do a large amount of technical training. So the point of the technical training is to retrain service leavers and veterans so that they can start a new career in the automotive industry. The main part of that we do is our IMI Level 3 Light Vehicle qualification. It's basically the minimum standard to become a mechanic or a technician within the automotive industry, working for either independent garages or for manufacturer main dealer franchises. And then we also do short courses as well, which are kind of top-up courses to that qualification. So we do a range of different levels of electric and hybrid vehicle qualifications. We also do an air conditioning qualification, which is the legal required license to be able to handle refrigerant gases. And we're just in the process of launching a level one hydrogen qualification, and we also just launched a basic vehicle maintenance course, which is aimed at people that know absolutely nothing about cars but want to have that little bit more confidence when it comes to checking that their car is roadworthy or taking their car in for a service or an MOT.
And with the people that you're working with in the military then, are those people, are they already technically minded? What sort of backgrounds do they have? Are they already familiar with, in general terms at least, with the automotive industry?
It varies, to be completely honest. So our full-time course does tend to be more people that didn't come from a technical background, but we do get people that have come from a technical background as well on that course. That is quite a varied range of people. The last part of the charity is basically our vocational output. We do a range of different things here. So we have two initiatives that have been launched. One is Mission Automotive that was launched a few years back. And that basically allows large companies within the automotive industry to use us to develop their Armed Forces recruitment programs and the Armed Forces Covenant as well. So the Armed Forces Covenant, they can pledge to do a whole range of different things to support veterans, and we assist with that within those companies. So there'll be lots of people benefiting from that work that might not have ever even heard of Mission Motorsport, because they'll be applying outside of us to jobs within those brands, and then they will find it easier than what they would have done a number of years ago because of the changes that we've made to the way that those companies recruit veterans, basically. We also have the same initiative but for the renewables industry, so that is Mission Renewable, and does basically exactly the same thing, but it's aimed at renewables rather than automotive, so things like wind farms and solar farms and that kind of thing.
So how has, in terms of the retraining of people or training them ready for an automotive career, how has Mission Motorsport's approach developed then, I guess, from its beginnings to where you are now and what you offer?
So officially the training wing launched back in 2015. We did the pilot program the year earlier than that, so in 2014 we started the pilot program. Back then we were a satellite centre for Tedworth House, which was run by Help for Heroes. We offered a City and Guilds Level 3 Light Vehicle qualification, and that was the only thing that we did. It was very open. You could, once you were registered on the course, you could essentially come on whatever days you wanted to, as long as it was a day that we had a trainer available. And over the years, we've structured it a bit more, quite a lot more actually, and we've changed the warding bodies, and we're now our own approved centre. So we changed to the IMI, or the Institute for the Motor Industry, and we are an approved centre through them, so we can now deliver a wider range of courses, and we're not linked into Tedworth House anymore, which is no longer run by Help for Heroes. We've structured it a lot more, so basically now when you book onto a course, you will get a list of dates, and you'll get planned training on those dates, so it's much more structured. The time period that it takes to complete that is between 9 months and 12 months, just purely depending on the calendar. And we've essentially done that to speed up that process. We found that the original method and then some subsequent methods of delivering it in between those two were potentially quite long, depending on the learner and the learner's needs. And actually the more structured approach tends to work much better for getting people into jobs in a reasonable period of time, and being able to give them very structured, comprehensive training.
Out of interest then, because this is arguably, I guess, one of the most extreme types of career change that someone can do, you know, moving from military life, not only moving from military life to civilian life, but moving career as well, so shifting into automotive. So what kind of challenges do the people coming through Mission Motorsports training face then? And how do you help them overcome them?
Yeah, the challenges are very individual, I would say. It really does depend on the person. So their background in the military can range massively on the type of job they did. So we talked earlier about technical and non-technical, but actually within that technical, there's a huge range of different job roles. You can be a vehicle mechanic in the military, or you could have been one of many different job roles working on aeroplanes, helicopters, boats, those kind of things. So it does really depend on what skill set people have got, and also even other parts. So people have worked on radio systems are going to have quite a good understanding of electrical work and that kind of thing. And then you would get people that worked on tanks that tend to have quite a good mechanical ability or understand at least how to use tools and those kind of things. And then all the way through to people that do that run stores, or they're administrators, or those kind of things that were really not very technical. So the challenge is on being able to complete the course just purely on a previous ability sort of consideration there. Does really, really depend on where that person came from within the military, and also what their hobbies are. We get lots of people that did jobs that were completely not technical in the military, that their hobbies were playing around with cars or driving cars or bikes or you know, something similar like that. And those people have got experience that they can draw upon from outside of their main job role within the military. On a personal level, the transitional consideration there is probably the harder part. That's probably where there's more challenges to overcome, especially for those that are medically discharged, because that can happen at any point in your career. It could happen 18 months in, it could happen 20 years in, or anywhere, you know, realistically in that range, or either side of that range as well. So for those that are medically discharged and have to find a new career, that can be, although that period, you know, that process takes a period of time, that can be quite a sudden realization for them, and that can cause lots of issues and can bring up lots of challenges for those people. Service leavers that are choosing to leave probably have had a little bit more time to decide what they're interested in, what they want to do, but it doesn't mean there's not challenges there still for them. Working in the military is like an industry all of its own, but it's more than that, because it's an industry and it's a community and it's almost a family. And some people probably would describe it as a family. So to leave that behind and move into a completely new industry with a new family is very difficult. And I think that's difficult regardless of what career you move from and to. But you're right, I mean, moving out of the military is probably one of the biggest transitions of career change and life change that you can have.
So how many of the people that go through Mission Motorsport and complete the training, how many of those came to you, proactively, and how many came to Mission Motorsport just due to the relationship that you have with the armed forces?
It's quite a difficult question to answer, really. I guess we do quite a range of advertisements. So we hold our national transition event every year, which we had just last month. So depending on the years, that's grown each year. We had over 1,000 people registered to come to that event this year. I don't know what number off the top of my head actually attended, but it's a large number of people that come to that event, and that event is designed to give people that are transitioning service leavers a good idea of what the options are out there, and that covers a range of automotive and renewables and other sectors as well. There's normally other charities that bring land-based or farming forestry equipment and lots of other things like that are there as well. So lots of people would hear about us through that event, but they would obviously have already have heard of Mission Motorsport to have come to that event, because that's one of our events. We do stuff with the transition courses that are done, so we'll have somebody that can attend those, not every single one, but the ones that we can manage to get to, we have somebody that attends those and talks about the charity, and obviously part of that is the training, and then obviously the potential to gain work from that training. We talk about ourselves in so many different places, it's kind of a bit hard to track who has come to us because of our events and who's come to us because they've heard us on a podcast like this one, for example, or they've seen something on the BBC News, or we were actually mentioned in Parliament a little while ago for our Mission Automotive initiative. So somebody might have heard of us through that, and then gone and found us on our website, and then inquired through our website. The majority of our inquiries do come in through, certainly training inquiries do come in through our website or for events like the NTE, the National Transition Event.
And I guess it's important, given what the automotive sector, the changes that it's going through and the challenges that it faces in terms of new technologies coming in, how is Mission Motorsport keeping up with those? I know you mentioned EV training is already part of the range of courses that you offer, but how about other areas as well? How do you hope to keep Mission Motorsport up to date?
So all courses, all automotive courses, have a small section in them that is about alternative fuel sources. When we deliver our full-time, the light vehicle qualification, there are parts of that where the learners don't necessarily learn how to work on vehicles that have got newer technologies than just petrol and diesel, but they do have to learn what those new technologies are, obviously as of the date that we're delivering it, some of the safety aspects and how to identify those vehicles. So it's relatively basic on that front, but yeah, all of our courses we have to talk about those things. So we also, like you said, we deliver the electric vehicle qualifications, so we've done that for a couple of years now, and those courses are always in development. So as the electric vehicle industry changes its battery chemistries or its technologies to more modern and better quality, or maybe even more sustainable technologies, we update our courses and change those. The newest course that we've applied to deliver and are now allowed to deliver is the hydrogen awareness qualification. It's quite low level, it's just a level one qualification, so it is about the awareness of the safety around those cars, opposed to actually doing complicated diagnostics or repair on those vehicles. Those types of courses will come out as we go further into the technology and as those cars become more readily available. So yeah, delivering the hydrogen course, we currently don't have a planned date for that, but we will launch those this summer. Yeah, as you know, we're always looking for those new technology courses to be able to offer to people, because we think it's really important that the guys and girls that come through, certainly on our full-time course, have the option of being able to book onto other courses that would make them more employable. And having those extra qualifications definitely does trump some people that are already in the industry, because not everybody in the industry has those qualifications. The IMI, the Institute for the Motor Industry, quite often talk about skills shortages within the industry. And that is mostly focused around technicians that are able to work on electric vehicles, but that does also cover other fuel sources. So whether it's hydrogen or people that have got the knowledge around synthetic fuels, but there's actually just a shortage in the industry overall. There is a shortage of mechanics and technicians that are qualified and able to do the level of work that is required just across the board. But yeah, certainly as far as the new technologies go, that's definitely something that there is a skill shortage on. And yeah, and we think there's a lot of value in offering that to the people that come for our training.
Well, you've actually touched on what I wanted to make my final question. As you said, it's kind of well known that the sector suffers from a bit of a skill shortage, but also both you in your position, me covering the industry, we know how much it can offer as well. So if you were in a room with some military people and they were asking you, why should I think about automotive? What answer would you give them to make them think of automotive as a possible career path post-military service?
Obviously, this does depend a little bit on the person's interests. You know, someone that's interested in cars, as it is anyway, the answer just becomes even easier. But for people that aren't interested in cars so much, the automotive industry offers a huge range of job roles. And there is a bit of a misconception that to work in the automotive industry, you've got to be a technician or a mechanic. And actually, that's not true. There's virtually every job role that you could think of within the automotive industry. There's design engineers that do computer-aided design and analysis of components. There's people that do practical test and development for warranty work or for where components are being developed, either to modify them to make them better or developed in the first instance. There's people that work in HR, sales, customer service, management. You know, there's such a range of different job roles that you can do. Whatever you're interested in, you could probably find a job role within the automotive industry. And there's no reason that once you're in the automotive industry and you have spent a bit of time working for a manufacturer or a franchise dealership or an independent dealership or anywhere else, that you could move around other job roles, because you've kind of learned the industry by that point, and you could probably quite easily change around and do different things. Lots of technicians become service advisors or workshop managers. Lots of people that work in parts supply are able to move into different aspects of administration or organisation within the automotive industry. And that is what makes the automotive industry so exciting, is that there is such a varied amount of people and jobs. And I do believe most of, if not all of those jobs, are quite varied jobs themselves. You know, you don't necessarily do the same things day in, day out. And yeah, I think it is a really interesting and exciting place to work. And I haven't even managed to get and speak about actually being a trainer. Being a trainer and working with such a range of different people delivering those qualifications to them is an incredibly interesting job. And then you've also got the motorsport sector as part of the automotive industry, which is massively varied and yeah, very, very interesting to work in any range of job that's within that small area of, it's not that small, relatively large area of the automotive industry.
Unfortunately, as always, we've run out of time, and I'm sure we could carry on talking about the subject for a lot longer. But thanks for your time on the podcast, David. And I hope you've all enjoyed listening. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next one.